Hello, and welcome back for another affiliate-focused branch of the UF Care Podcast, conversations with early career professionals studying addiction research here at the University of Florida, as well as providing advice and support for those entering the field. My name is Victor. I'm a second-year graduate student here in the Department of Clinical Health Psychology, working with Dr. Jeff Boisinot. And today we're joined by one Dr. Shelby Blaze. Hi, Shelby.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Shelby comes to us with a really cool story. Usually when I'm talking with folks on this podcast, it's because they've graduated or are about to graduate their terminal doctorate and then move on into the world. Dr. Shelby is actually a first year in the clinical health psychology program. She already finished a doctoral in neuroscience here at UF. Is that right?
Yes. That is correct.
So I want to dive into that a little bit today and get a chance to see what went into that decision, what sort of research interests you, what ways you can think of bridging that gap between neuroscience and clinical psych. So first, I do want to say I was snooping around on you online a little bit, and I saw that you were a McKnight Brain Institute Rising Star last year.
I was, yeah.
There's a whole little like 2-minute video. It's got very upbeat music in the background where you're sort of presenting your work with rats. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Was that your dissertation project?
Yes. Yeah, so I went over a little bit of my dissertation project in that video. But my dissertation project consisted of like 3 main experiments, kind of looking at modulating the dopaminergic system and how that affects risky decision making. Would you like me to go further into like the different experiments that I did?
Sure. It's open to you. What would you like to talk about?
Yeah, of course. So one of the main experiments that I found really, really cool was looking at chronic cocaine self-administration and its effects on risky decision making. So in the lab that I was a part of under Barry Setlow, we had a decision-making task in which a rat had the choice between kind of 2 levers, one that would deliver a small safe reward, another would deliver kind of a large risky reward. And so what we did is we did chronic cocaine self-administration and kind of young adult rats and rats kind of in adulthood. And we found that when we administered chronic cocaine self-administration during young adulthood, it caused long-lasting increases in risky choice. But when we did chronic cocaine self-administration in adult rats, we did not see this increase in risky choice. So we kind of found this vulnerability window in young adulthood in which the brain is very sensitive to the effects of cocaine. So after that, I kind of looked at kind of modulating the different like serotonergic system, dopaminergic system, and norepinephrine to see its effects on risky decision making, to kind of understand the neurobiology of what's going on.
So the dopaminergic, serotonergic, these are all the different systems of neurotransmitters in the brain associated with pleasure responses, right?
Or like reward responses.
Reward, okay.
Yeah, and also the noradrenergic system. So what I kind of did with that project is I gave different agonists and antagonists during the risky decision making task. And we found that when we administered a D2, D3 agonist, we saw a significant decrease in risky choice in like healthy control rats. We didn't find any effects when we looked at the noradrenergic system or the serotonergic system or the D1 like receptors. So this was very specific to D2, D3 receptors, and more specifically it was a D2 receptors. So understanding that, I then kind of looked at the VTA, ventral tegmental area, which is the main source of dopaminergic neurons in the midbrain that is a part of the reward system. And so I performed optogenetics or used optogenetic techniques to actively and acutely inhibit the dopaminergic neurons in the ventral tegmental area during our risky decision-making task. And we found, what's really cool is that when we did, when we inactivated the VTA during our decision-making task, when we inhibited during the large, unpunished outcome, we saw a decrease in risky choice. So the outcome that's actually the best outcome that the rat's going to choose, kind of hopefully a lot, because they get two food pellets, no punishment. They then switch from not pressing that lever anymore when we inhibited that brain region. So we're able to kind of modulate risky decision-making in healthy control rats.
Interesting.
So I found that very interesting, because then if you can understand the neurobiology of kind of the reward pathways, and if you're able to manipulate them, then you can hopefully decrease risky decision-making or other aspects that happen following like chronic cocaine use or other drugs of abuse.
So how immediately applicable is this to humans?
So immediately applicable, not very much, but we kind of need to understand the neurobiology so that we can tailor techniques, different therapeutic techniques to humans.
Right.
So when we further kind of understand really what's going on, how things are changing, then maybe in the future we can find techniques to help individuals with substance abuse reduce kind of their risky decision-making, because we know that individuals with substance use disorder have kind of maladaptive decision-making.
Mm-hmm.
And this is pretty long-lasting. And so if we can kind of reduce that, we can hopefully improve someone's quality of life.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Shelby, how did you get into this area of research?
So initially, I actually was studying Alzheimer's and ALS in undergrad. And then I went into the graduate program in biomedical sciences here at UF, and we were able to rotate with three different mentors. And at the end, we chose a mentor. And during that time, I had some very close friends who had substance use disorder. And I had seen them battle relapse and kind of battle very difficult times. And that really kind of hit me hard. And I just, from then on, kind of wanted to focus on substance use disorder and just do the best that I could, because I know this disorder affects people and affects a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sorry that you had such a personal experience with this condition, but I'm glad that it led you into a life of research and uncovering more understanding about how it works. So you started this work with the rat models in neuroscience. What led you to transition once you had your doctorate? You could have been done with grad school. You did it.
I'm done.
You beat it. Why'd you come back for round two?
So I came back for round two because I wanted to get a PhD in clinical psychology and also hopefully get a license in clinical psychology, just so that I can be close to the clinical population that I'm interested in. Because I find as researchers, sometimes we may not be studying the things that affect our patient population the most. And for me, I think it's really important that I stay connected to the clinical population so that I know that I'm studying something that is going to benefit someone in the future, or studying something that is their kind of top priority versus other things that we may as researchers find difficult for someone, but it may not be their ultimate worst thing that they're dealing with.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, it seems like it is feasible for researchers and academics sometimes to get so excited by the questions that are out there and the different techniques and models that become available as we follow these questions. It's a bit of a stereotype that we can lose track of the real human experience of what's going on there. I'm not saying this is something that always happens, but it's certainly something to be aware of. And it seems like you are aware of that.
Yes, exactly.
So what are you hoping to do next? Where do you go from this? What research direction do you hope to take over the next few years in this program?
So I'm really interested, of course, in substance use. I'm interested in alcohol use, which I hadn't studied back in my other PhD. And Jeff Boyce Snow, my mentor and your mentor,
My mentor. Whoa.
But he's very focused on kind of alcohol use disorder, substance use, but he also brings in a pain component, which I'm really interested in studying because we know that there's not really good therapeutic like to deal with chronic pain, and that this can also sometimes lead to individuals having kind of opioid use disorder, substance use disorder from self-medication. So I really want to kind of understand how pain can then influence kind of substance use and how kind of substance use can influence pain, because it's all very much connected.
It absolutely is. It's cool to hear the kind of work that you're doing, because it is so, I mean, it's very much next to the work that I do because we're in the same lab, but it's nice to hear sort of the approach and how your angle brought you to this place and how it might influence, because certainly your experience with neuroscience is going to influence everything that you do for your career, and see how all those pieces fit together into whatever comes next for you. It's terribly exciting.
It is exciting. And I think having the background in neuroscience is really helpful for me with this PhD to kind of put everything together and to understand kind of what's going on in the brain and kind of working with humans instead of rodents.
Mm-hmm. That's excellent. What do you do outside of the lab? Is there anything that you do for fun?
Yes. So I love to rock climb. There's a gym that just opened up here in Gainesville. So I do that pretty regularly now. Also, I love gardening. I have a huge vegetable garden in my backyard. It kind of keeps me connected to everything, so I can watch things kind of grow from nothing, basically. I am also a woodworker. My family is into woodworking, and we have three generations of Blazes who do woodworking. So that's kind of exciting.
Do you do woodworking together, like in the backyard, you know, like pass the saw and, oh, here's some extra mahogany.
Yep. I mean, so my dad has a little shop, and so I'll work in that shop with him sometimes. And then my brother has his own projects, and he's an engineer, so he puts different spins on the projects he works on.
That's excellent. Okay, and then last question. What advice might you give, considering your experience with neuroscience and now clinical psychology and rock climbing and woodworking? What advice would you give for others who are considering the same or similar paths as you?
I would recommend just speaking to everyone that you can. I think for me, that was what was really helpful was the networking process. For example, within the Center for Addiction Research Education, that's kind of how I met Dr. Boysnow, Jeff Boysnow, who is now my current mentor. And I think having those different conversations with others who are either in your research field or not will give you different perspectives on kind of what you want to do or different ways you can look at your own research. I think you find that most people are very helpful when you have questions, and it's just asking those different questions that'll kind of push you into the field that you want to do.
And is there a way that people could reach out to you if they have any questions?
Yes, of course. So if anyone wants to reach out to me, my email is sblaes@ufl.edu. You can also find it on the Clinical and Health Psychology website.
Excellent. Thank you so much for taking the time to meet today, Shelby. I really appreciate it. I guess I'll see you at the lab meeting.
Yes.
I also want to thank the University of Florida Center for Addiction Research and Education, Dr. Oliver Grundman, Dr. Sarah Jo Nixon, Dr. Joanne Paris, and all of our mentors and future collaborators. Thank you all for listening.